it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
You are talking absolute rubbish.
Absolute rubbish.
As long as I say we can persuade Willie to stay in Ireland, we'll stay in England.
GSI, get stuck in.
And here's a new steeplechasing star. It's Galapagosham, who gallops to glory in the Gold Cup.
That's probably the most ridiculous question I've
ever
been asked.
It is, I know, but I had to ask you.
No, you didn't have to ask me.
You're calling out prices. Bookmakers' prices on this channel, right? Yep. You couldn't have two bananas to a banana with the bookmakers.
Jumped in like a bag of hammers.
The racing is under such scrutiny.
If you don't like racing, go and watch Peppa Pig.
Welcome to the Final Furlong Podcast. It is great to have your company. Thank you for tuning in. And delighted to say that as part of our Christmas special, we are joined by one of the most talented horsemen in Ireland. Incredible record as a racehorse owner, and now a phenomenal record as a trainer. Barry Connell, welcome to the Final Furlong Podcast.
Thanks, Hamish.
How does Christmas Day shape up at the Barry Connell household?
Well, probably start off down in the yard, helping out, probably muck a few boxes out, and maybe ride one out, and come home and grab a bit of turkey then afterwards.
See, while some of us are able to take things slightly easy, see a choir, go to mass, pass out the presents, you've still got the whole yard to be looking after and working out. One journalist described your stable this week as an equine paradise. What inspired you to create such an incredible training facility, and when did you actually build it?
We bought the land about 5 years ago. It's 45 acres roughly, just outside the village in Erne. We're 15 minutes from the Curragh. That parcel of land came up for sale, and it was nicely laid out. That the land was in good condition. There wasn't much on it. A couple of outbuildings. There was a small little cottage. It was actually, I think, a holiday home for a German guy. So we bought him. We bought it off his widow. He died when he was 101. I think he used it as a holiday home. So it was a blank canvas, and we set about designing what we wanted to have in terms of stables and so forth. It took probably about two years to put that together. So this is the third year we have the license, third full year we have the license now. So I suppose we finished about 2.5-3 years ago. It's a great facility. We have a gallop. Our own gallop down there. We do all our day-to-day stuff there. But we also have a Curragh license. We're only 15 minutes from the Curragh, and I think that's the best of both worlds, because we're able to do all our routine stuff at home, and then when we need to do a bit of work to finish them off, we load them up in the box and bring them to the Curragh. So they know they're going to work when we load them up in the box. As I say, we have all the facilities there at home. We have kind of indoor outdoor arena, lunging, all the usual standard stuff. It seems to work. You know, the horses are they're nice and relaxed at home, and we're able to get them pretty fit, and then we have you know, fantastic facilities at the Curragh. We, you know, all the schooling facilities, grass gallops, all weather gallops. Yeah, we can't complain. You know, we lack for nothing on the facilities front.
I'd imagine those away days to the Curragh are hugely beneficial to the racehorse themselves and getting them ready for the big race days.
Yeah. You know, I think as opposed to being based on the Curragh, the trainers that are there based on the Curragh, I think that, you know, when the horses come out the door in the morning, they don't know in their own head whether they're going for a routine day out or whether they're actually going to work. Which can, you know, kind of rev up the horses a bit. Whereas our guys are, you know, they're relaxed at home and they know when they're going. You know, they're going to do a piece of work. You know, the facilities are incredible. You know, we've brilliant grass gallops, which we typically tend to use from, depending on how much rain we've got, we're kind of use them a little bit earlier this year because we've had a lot of rain. Some years you don't get to use them till after Leopardstown at Christmas. I'd say it's the best of both worlds, and it's there's a lot less horses on the Curragh now than there would have been years ago. You know, when Desi Hughes was alive, he had a big national on string. He would have had 70 horses. Nowadays, there aren't that many people training jumpers on the Curragh. So you know, we've kind of Rolls Royce facilities, and you know, you're not having to fight your way to get onto the gallop. I've been to Newmarket now, but I can only imagine what it's like to run traffic lights.
Yeah, I was just thinking rugby tackles and elbows being thrown left, right, and centre to get an advantage. As an owner, you've owned some fantastic horses over the years. A horse very closely associated to this show back in the day, poor old Araconner. But Shinrock Paddy, the Tullow Tank, Mount Bumbellin. You rode a winner at Cheltenham. You rode several winners, but notably beating Richard Johnson in the finish at the Cheltenham Open meeting, which I'm sure you got a lot of satisfaction from. But how does all of that compare to being a Cheltenham Festival winning trainer?
No comparison at all. Owning Cheltenham winner was fantastic at the time. It was brilliant because I'd been going to Cheltenham since I was a young lad with friends from college and so forth. You know, never thought I'd have a runner there. And you know, we've been lucky enough to have had four Cheltenham winners as an owner. And as you mentioned then, I was lucky enough to ride two winners at the November meeting, and I got to ride in the champion bumper a couple of times, which was an amazing buzz. And I never thought that'd be surpassed until you know, I was standing down the bottom of the chute after the Supreme when Marine had won. It was kind of a surreal experience. Again, you know, in my wildest dreams, did I ever think I'd be a trainer with a runner in the race, let alone end up training the winner. So, but it was, I was indescribable, really. You know, to have prepared the horse in a small little yard with 25 horses riding out to go over and take on the biggest yards in Ireland and England, in a marquee race. I mean, the Supreme is to me always, you know, the best novice race at the festival. It kicks everything off. You have the festival roar, puts the hair standing on the back of your head. Probably stupidly last year, I had talked up the horse quite a lot, and, you know, kind of given a lot of hostages to fortune in terms of, you know, what I thought about the horse and his chances of winning on the day. So I think I said to somebody, when the horse galloped down to the canter down to the start, and I was standing at the bottom of the chute waiting for the race to start. It was probably the hardest 5 minutes of my life, wondering what on earth am I going to say if this horse runs bad, you know? I'm going to look very foolish, but thankfully that didn't happen.
Yeah, because you were incredibly bullish. You were very bullish going into the Royal Bond, and that was not an easy race at all. I know Irish Point was a massive price that day, but there was a huge amount of talk about Champ Kiley. I know Patrick loves Ashro Diamond, and that's been backed up since. Irish Point himself went on to be a Grade 1 winner at Aintree, and we're going to see him in the Jack de Bromhead hurdle over 3 miles at the Christmas meeting.
Four Grade 1 winners came out of it, which is unusual, because the Royal Bond of late, I mean, there's some brilliant horses won it over the years, but the Royal Bond of late has tended to be, maybe it's because the position it's in the season, it comes very early, and a lot of the better novices maybe haven't run at that stage. So it tends to be maybe horses that have been on the go during the summer and the early autumn. But as it turned out, this year was a vintage renewal, and you know, there was a host of Grade 1 winners come out of it. It was in hindsight a very competitive race.
Yeah, very much so. And listen, I got this horse badly wrong last season, and I had Paul Ferguson constantly telling me there's a very clear and obvious winner of the Supreme Emmett, and it's clearly Marine Nationale. And I kept on thinking to myself, horses who turn up in the Supreme on the back of a break of more than 99 days have a terrible record. You got to go back to Captain CB in the late noughties for the last one to do it. And that just infected my mind, and I couldn't get that stat out of my head. And yet, all the way along, remained you in the background, incredibly bullish, and very bullish about his jockey as well, that the occasion wouldn't faze Michael, and it certainly didn't.
No. Look, just to deal with the situation regarding the gap, I think statistics can, you know, sometimes the reason for the gap is that he kind of missed his winter season proper the year before. He had a sore wither, and we just stopped with him. It sounds like something trivial, but it actually was something that was giving him a bit of trouble. So we said, look, we'd just give him a little break, and he wasn't ready for a run until after the Punchdown Festival. So his first one was in a bumper in May. And then we said, look, the horse is fit, and you know, he's had a break, so look, we'll keep going with him, and he handles nice ground. So we navigated our way through the summer season. He won two bumpers. He won the Punchdown, he won a winner's bumper in Killarney, and then we gave him a mini break, and he won a maiden hurdle in Punchdown in October. And then won the Royal Bond. And it was for that reason that we said, look, you know, he has been on the go all summer. He's not a guy that's probably going to relish winter ground. So he had his Grade 1 won, and that's the reason for it. You know, he's a light-framed athletic horse. So he's not a hard horse to get fit after a break. And I think freshening him up and giving him 6 or 8 weeks off there after the Royal Bond in November was the right thing to do. And he came to hand really well again, and ended up going to Cheltenham very, very fresh.
He's clearly a very special horse, and we've seen that on the track, but what is it about his characteristics at home that made you so confident about him going into the Royal Bond and to the Cheltenham Festival?
I've never had a horse as quick as this guy. He's very, very, very quick. Speed, incredible speed. And his temperament is excellent as well. He's a bomb-proof temperament, which when you get to the big occasions like a Royal Bond Day or Leopardstown Christmas or Cheltenham Day, how many times do you go to the pre-parade ring or see horses with earplugs and hoods and the eyes popping out of their head, and you know they've run the race before they get down to the start. Nothing fazes this guy. You know, he walked around the pre-parade ring like he was at home. Speed, athleticism. You know, he's very easy to train. He's sound, jumps great. Handles a bit of nice ground. We were concerned when the ground came up a bit soft in Royal Bond Day, and also it rained all day the day before the Supreme. We got the boat over. We're driving down, and we're nearly blown out of it with all the rain. But look, he handled that as well. I don't think he'd like heavy ground, but you know, he's just very versatile. He's the quickest. I'd say he's the quickest racehorse I've ever had. You know, I certainly think he'd be good enough to be a graded horse on the flat. He has a flattish pedigree on the sire side. He's by French Navy. Charlie Appleby trained him. He stood in Kildangan for a couple of seasons. But he's very quick. And if you go back and look at his bumpers and look at the manner in which he won both his bumpers, never come off the bridle. So his biggest asset is his speed, and I think that really came to the fore in the Royal Bond, because everything that could have gone wrong went wrong. It was a small field, I think probably seven runners, and he was bang down the inner, and he was tracking, I think, Hercule Desoy, who flattened the third last, and he got taken back. And Michael was very good in him. A lot of guys would have wheeled out, pulled out, and he just stayed where he was, and knew, because he was used to riding the horse, how quick he was. And he just stayed where he was. And when they turned in between the last two, he got a gap and got out. And like up to that, he jumped brilliant. And the only mistake he made was at the last, where he, I don't know whether it was the crowd or whatever, but he lost his concentration and he flattened the last and lost all his momentum. All he had to do was pop the last, would have won probably snug by a length or two, but he lost all his momentum, and it's a very short run in Ferry House, and Irish Point got a length up on him, and again Michael, knowing the horse was very good, he didn't panic. He just gathered them up very slowly, gave them one little tap down the neck, and just pushed them out hands and heels and go up to win by a cozy short head, if there can ever be such a thing. But very cool. And like himself and Michael came along together. Michael rang me for the ride in Punchestown. He was a £7 claiming amateur at the time. And we didn't have, Finney McGuire works for us now full time. We didn't have Finney at the time. So I think Michael had ridden a horse for me once before in a point to point. So I said, look, yeah, you can ride the horse. And when he won on him in Punchestown, you know, I was very impressed with how cool he was on the horse and how stylish he was. And, you know, I said, come on down and ride out. So he came down and he started riding out a few days a week. And the more we saw, the more we liked him. You know, I had a chat with him about turning pro. He was 23. At the time, he had his degree in done in UCD. He'd taken 3 years out. Had previously been champion novice point-to-point rider. I think he 300 point-to-point rides 40 or 50 winners. So he was the right age, and he could claim off 10-2, so he could claim £7 off 10-2. And I said, look, you know, you can ride all of ours. And it was brilliant. You know, we had a great season last year between the two of us. Like, we had three grade one winners, a grade three winner with Dennis Gerry, the Cheltenham. Obviously, Cheltenham was the pinnacle. We won a lot of other nice races, a couple of big premier handicaps. You know, we essentially had a free seven and £5 for most of the year.
Oh, yeah, he was stealing it. It's like, really, he should be giving that claim back then. Anyway, yeah. It was a fantastic weapon. But I quite like the fact that he was the one who contacted you, that he's confident enough to do that.
Yeah. I mean, he was, there was nobody jocked up on the horse, and he was riding away as an amateur, and he just, you know, chanced his arm, and look, that's fate. That's the way it worked out. And we ended up hooking up, and, knew by the way he was gelling with the horse, that there was no way I was going to take him off and put somebody else up. I don't know whether it's ever been done before that a seven pound claimer was ridden a grade one. He might have been claiming five by the Royal Bond. I'd have to check that. I think he was claiming seven when he rode in the grade three in Roscommon on Enniskerry. But he was claiming five when he won the Royal Bond, and then when he won the Nathaniel Lacey on Goodland. And generally, look, what would happen is there'd be some big profile name who's free on the day, and the claimer would have been yanked off the horse, and that would have been the end of it. But he was riding all of ours at that stage, and you know, everything was going really well. And I knew by his temperament that he wasn't going to be phased. He wasn't phased on the day of the Royal Bond, and when everything went against him, I knew then that that wasn't going to be an issue. It was the perfect ride he gave him at Cheltenham. I think Ruby Advert went back and reviewed it. He was working for ITV on the day, and he said, look, he just kept it simple. There was one horse to beat, Fasel Vega, and he just tracked him, sat behind him. The winning of the race for me actually was at the first hurl. If you go back and look at it, he jumped off behind Paul and winged the first hurl and landed a half length in front of him. I took him back. And he just sat on his boot the whole way around, and had one go at him at the last, and the rest is history.
It was a magic ride, and it was a ride full of confidence as well. He rode him like he was the best horse in the race. He clearly was the best 2-mile novice hurdler last season. You've seen his old rival, Fasel Vega, make a successful winning chasing debut. He's going to line up in the grade one racing post novice chase. Last time that race is going to be run too, which is interesting. So
last time it's going to be run as a grade one. I'm not sure if they're... It'll probably still, I don't know if they're still going to run it and downgrade it. I'm not sure. But look, all the main protagonists, all the main opponents have already had a run this year. And he's probably the last of the top tier ones to run. We had intended to run him in Navan in the race that Fasel Vega had won, and it wouldn't have bothered me a bit to, you know, if we'd started the season taking him on. It's actually, you know, if you look at that race, it's a race that Duvan, I think Min has won it. There aren't that many 2-mile races on a nice track kind of 3 or 4 weeks before Christmas, so it's the obvious place to go. But the ground was bottomless that day, and we just said, no, we're not going to start him off on rotten ground. So we said, look, we'll wait, let him run the beginners. Obviously have to, you know, pass up the grade one there, but, you know, it's the right thing to do by the horse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And this is where El Fabiolo started out last season. Not in this race, it was Dicer Dynamo, but he started out pretty late in the season, all things considering. The crucial question, I guess, is because you acquired him during COVID, so there was no point to pointing, we haven't got to see him jump a fence at all on video yet. How has he been schooling and how has he taken defences?
Yeah, he's a natural. I kind of thought he would be. If you look at how he jumps his hurls, he doesn't jump them like a real champion hurler, you know, where they're just barely bending their knees, leaning forward and flicking over them. He's making a shape over the hurl. You know, he's very he was very efficient at jumping hurls, but he looked like that he would adapt to the fences, and you know, that's proven to be the case. You mentioned there COVID. We actually bought him from Sam Curling during the COVID year. So he had been ready to run in a point, and he had extensive schooling done down in Sam's. So he already had those building blocks in place. And when we obviously didn't school him over fences beforehand. But he's done a good bit at home, and he's schooled over grass, over hurls on over fences on grass with the girl. And look, he looks very, very good. He looks a natural.
What are you looking forward most to seeing from him on his chasing debut?
Look, there's probably only going to be 8 or 9 runners. A nice clear round with nothing untoward, no mishaps. It looks like there's been plenty of drying in the last couple of days. I think the ground is good to yielding up there. They might even need to get the watering can out, believe it or not, after all the rain we've had. Yeah, but no, the ground will be the ground will be nice for him, and just a good clear run around, and hopefully you know he doesn't have any mishaps. But he seems clever, you know, and I think the chasing is going to suit him equally as well as Earls did.
Oh, he's a hugely exciting prospect. If, please God, touch wood, everything goes well and he makes a winning chasing debut, maybe he wins as impressively as Dicer Dynamo, but just get the win. Would your thought process be match with Fasel Vega in the Irish Arkle, or go a different route?
No. I mean, the obvious route, the route all along we were going to take was beginners and the 2 grade ones in Ireland, and then the Arkle. So we've obviously missing the grade one at Christmas. So his next step after that will definitely be the Irish Arkle. And then if we're still on target, then the Arkle in Cheltenham. And because he hasn't had that many runs this season, we'd be pretty confident we'd come back for Punchestown. We didn't go to Punchestown last year. We finished up after Cheltenham because, you know, he had been on the go a long time.
Yeah. And keeping him in peak form for those few races isn't the easiest of things to do, and particularly when you know his future is going to lie over fences anyway. There wouldn't really be a whole lot to be gained by taking him to Punchestown. How excited are you for seeing him in action?
Yeah, I look, it's great because the last time he had his saddle on was in the Supreme. It seems like an age ago. It's great to, you know, to have him back out again. You know, it's a different ball game this year because, you know, last year we were the kind of plucky upstart who was kind of going into Cheltenham. So you can kind of come in under the, I know he's a grade one winner, but you're coming in under the radar a little bit. And now you're going in there, you're favourite or joint favourite for the Arkle. So, you know, obviously there's a level of apprehension that everything would go right on the day. But I think, you know, we finished his last piece of work. He's done all his schooling. The ground conditions look like they're going to be suitable. So, you know, obviously excited and apprehensive as well at the same time, just to hopefully get it out of the way and, you know, kind of move on to the next level then.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And of course, there's going to be a huge crowd there, and they're all going to want to get a photograph with you and get to talk to you about him. And you're a very approachable person as well, which that's one of the great things about this sport. I love football. Yeah. I'm a huge Liverpool fan, hence the receding hairline. Yeah. But if we go to Anfield, we're not meeting Jurgen Klopp. You're not meeting Mo Salah. If you go to the races, not only do you get to see these horses up close and personal, but you get to see the stars of the equine sport as well. Yourself, Michael, Willie Mullins, you're all there in front of us, which is just amazing, the access that we have in this sport. And it's something no other sport has. Not, certainly not a mainstream sport like this.
Yeah, I think it's hugely important. And it's definitely incumbent on all the participants, you know, to do their bit with the media. You know, we had an open day with Fairy House last year before the Royal Bond, and we just finished another one with Leopardstown. They rang me to know could they do the press launch there last week. And look, I'm always happy. I love talking about horses, and you know, it's not a chore. And I think racing needs, you know, there are enough people out there and enough issues that it has to deal with, you know, be it advertising bans or affordability checks, you know. So I think it is incumbent on the trainers, jockeys, and so forth to be as open and promote the sport as much as they can, because we all love it. And if you know, if we don't do that, then you're not engaging the current and the next set of racing fans to, you know, to come along behind. And like, I come from a background of going racing since I was a kid with my dad, who had no interest in racing other than just being a punter. So I get where people are coming from. Like, I was a kid when Denali won the big race in Leopardstown, and it was probably one of the most exciting race days. I think there was 23,000 people in Leopardstown that day. It was mad. They were hanging off the trees. Tommy Tracy won the Irish Gold Cup in him. You know, it was just really, really exciting. And the thing about the jumps compared to the flat is the horses can stay around for 5 or 6 seasons. So the public, in a way, can nearly take ownership of those horses. You know, they know their traits and their attributes, and I think that makes a big difference. And you know, then the better ones develop a fan base, and they love to see them come back year after year.
Yeah, it's fantastic. You are right. There are some dark times in racing, and a lot of things that need to be sorted out. But there's so much positivity on the outsides of that, and on the inside of it as well. If we focus more on the sport itself and the people involved in it and the equine talent, promoting the likes of yourself and Marine Nationale, and then you promoting the sport, that's the key. That's what will drive it forward. That's what people care about. The other stuff, we need to be able to move past. There's plenty of horses that you're going to run over the festive period, but I've taken up a lot of your time, so I don't want to keep you any longer than is necessary. I am very interested, though, in Apples of Brazil. Ran a really nice race in a bumper the other day behind Sprint de la Mer. He didn't confirm the form, but my trump card was involved in that finish as well, and he very much did, albeit a long odds-on favourite the next day, bred by Patrick Mullins, ridden by Patrick Mullins for Gordon Elliott. How is your horse going, and when will we see him next?
Yeah, he's going well. We said we'd give him... one run the bumper at the festival last year in a winner's bumper. I didn't want to run him in a maiden bumper with you know, a full field. He was just a baby at the time. We just gave him a run, and he ran. He was quite green, but he ran well enough. And then came back to Navan. He's beaten two heads. I think it turned out to be a good race. The second horse has won well since, and the winner, I'd say, didn't run. He's only a 4-year-old, and I'd say he probably just didn't run his race the last day. Look, we like our horse. He's not really a bumper horse. he won a schooling hurl in Tipperary a couple of months ago, and I think he will definitely be better over a hurl. So he stays well. So we're looking at the 2.5 mile race on the 29th, on the Friday. And I wouldn't see him out of the frame. He's probably going to, you know, there'll probably be a few high profile horses in it. But I think, you know, certainly he's probably a good each way bet. You know, he'd probably be a decent price. And if he doesn't win, I think he'll go pretty close.
Yeah, it's potentially a deep race. Ballyburn is in there. There's a number of other very high profile horses, but I like the way your horse shaped the other day.
Yeah, there's a load of dual entries. Ballyburn is in the 2 mile as well. I don't know where he's going to go, but, you know, we won it last year with Goodland. And it generally tends to be the weaker of the two races. Having said that, it'll probably turn out to be really strong this year, but. We're definitely going for the 2.5, and he's in great nick, and he definitely give a good account of himself.
If there was a horse you were going to run over the next few weeks that we really should be paying attention to, who would that be?
Well, look, the two that we've talked about, those two. The other, we run a couple of other horses. There's one in the Pretemps qualifier, a mare called Nine Graces. She won a couple of races for me last year. We ran her in a few bumpers. She got placed the first time, but again, not a bumper horse, but has been a revelation over hers. She gets into the Pretemps on a nice mark. I think she's 125, so she gets in with about 10-4, 10-5 down near the bottom. And she did a lovely run there in Fairy House about 3 weeks ago. She finished third. And I think she could run a big race in the Pretemps. And we run another horse called Snake Oil on the first day, on the 26th, in a 2 mile 0-140 handicap. He's had his three runs over fences. He's got a handicap mark of 122. I think his hurl mark is 125. So it might lack a bit of experience, but jumps really well. I think Leperstown will suit him. And, you know, we like him. Think he could run into a place as well.
Okay. Snake Oil, definitely on the short list. Nine Graces in the Pretemps, where the real race is for fourth, but we'll be paying much closer attention to your horse for the win.
Is it five? I think it's five.
Have they changed it again?
Used to be, no, is it four? I know, I think he used to only have to be entered. He didn't even have to turn up.
Unbelievable.
And then you had to turn up, but it was a slow bicycle race. but if you actually want to win it, it was good. But yeah, it's obviously more competitive now. But no, look, she's a good old profile now. She's a brilliant jumper, and 3 miles around there, I think, can suit really well. So yeah, no, she's definitely a good chance. So look, the four we're bringing there, I mean, Marine, we'd expect to win. Apples, disappointed we wasn't in the first three, and the other two have definitely got lively each way chances.
You won't go wrong following Barry Connell, and I will never underestimate Marine National again. Really looking forward to seeing how he shapes over a fence. Very excited to see him in action over Christmas, and please God, we'll get to talk to you again before Cheltenham. Happy Christmas, Barry, and thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you. Thanks so much. Okay.
And thank you for watching. Hope you enjoyed this episode of the Final Furlong Podcast. More content coming your way very, very soon. Like, share, and subscribe. We'll talk to you again very soon on the Final Furlong Podcast. Look after yourself and each other. God bless.